Also avoid Pop-Tarts, as you know, and graham crackers. So could it be that one of the reasons we have the increase in ADD and ADHD, could it be that our breakfasts have changed and our lunches have changed? They've changed grossly, haven't they? Not even just a little bit. When you think of how much packaged food people are getting, it's just amazing. When you just even look at your own cart, your own grocery cart, and you see mainly packaged food. Remember, packaged food is lifeless. More than that, it has preservatives in it because it's the only way it can stay in a package. And we used to have a little bit of it when I grew up, and I know that was probably before any of you grew up, but we used to have little gardens in the backyard. I remember coming home after school and stopping by and getting a carrot out of the garden, wiping it off on my pants, and eating carrots. I mean, we had, you know, chickens, all those kinds of things that were much more normal. Liver every week. It's just in the whole town had liver. You could smell it in the air. So we all had those things. And yet, then just flash forward to now, and how many of those things would we see now? It would be, even when kids have carrots, it's the ones that are already all scraped off and have been in the bag for a long time. And they look like a carrot, and they crunch, and they probably have certainly more in them than a Pop-Tart. But life, we aren't feeding our kids enough life, and so they're just getting so toxic. And we would like to take our pregnant moms and put them in a glass bowl and keep them there for 9 months and just keep feeding them foods with life in them, and I believe that we would see a lot of difference in the children that we're seeing that are being assaulted. Remember, genetics and an environmental assault are the two things that we're seeing are bringing about these disorders and this disequilibrium in children. Let's just look at maybe what breakfast, lunch, and snacks will look like. We won't belabor this, but just to make sure that we're all on the same page. So we could have what for breakfast? We could have eggs. I'm just going to punch these all so we can see that. Oops. For breakfast, eggs, sometimes kids don't like eggs, but otherwise, if you change about once every day, you give them something different, it doesn't get old, so maybe they'll, if they like eggs, if not, hopefully they'll like them after a while. Otherwise, burritos, bean burritos, or egg burritos, egg sausage burritos, you know that bean burritos are just an excellent breakfast. The beans are one of the best sources of essential fatty acids and protein, and if you are in a hurry, you could do those in the car, can't you? If you want to save money, we have stay-at-home moms. They can save money by Sunday afternoon. They just make burritos, you know, whatever they want to put in them, and freeze them, and just use them all week long. It's a nice, portable breakfast that you can have. You not get them fried, but just the kind that are plain. There's lots of good things in there. If your child isn't allergic to peanuts, peanut butter toast one day. So when they say, what can we eat besides cereal? Lots of things. We don't need to have dessert for breakfast. We can just eat lots of things. Or a sandwich with some sort of meat in it. You know, a turkey sandwich, a tuna sandwich, you know, those kind of things if they like sandwiches. We don't have to have just breakfast food. Sausage, especially turkey sausage, those kinds of things are good. And you'll think of others. All of these children tend to not process protein well. As a result, they need more protein. In fact, you know the word protein comes from pro, which means first place. It's supposed to have first place in our children's diet and in our diets. And yet, it tends to be lower and lower on the scale, doesn't it? And so, as much as you can with that sandwich, what would you say? You would, for lunch, you would send maybe a sandwich, some whole fruit, if you cut it up, make it friendly. Soups are great. It's great lunch foods. Raw veggies, remember, at first, if they don't like them, give them ranch dip. If they can't do dairy, there's a non-dairy ranch dip, and just, you know, help make it easy for them. Kids like grapes a lot in their lunch boxes. And even cut up watermelon, which in the winter you say, oh, that's very expensive to get those little watermelons. But how expensive is a box of cereal? Isn't it about $3.50? It's a lot of money. So it works out all right. The tuna and crackers, avocado slices, you'll just get creative. There are many more ideas than this. I just wanted to give you some so that we say, what can we have if they don't like eggs? Give them, you know, a can of chili in the morning. All of those are good. What kind of snacks? You know, snacks are what sink us, isn't it? Because maybe we'll do okay breakfast, lunch, and dinner. with snacks. If you keep around a lot of popcorn with salt, and you can put some butter on it. And yes, you can use microwave if that's what the children like to make. If you have a chance, then just make the popcorn in a saucepan. You don't need a popcorn maker. Just a saucepan with coconut oil. Makes it delicious. If you get it done in about 1 minute, and it's like a whole grain. You truly have fed their nervous system. Keep veggies with dip around. We talked about the fact that we keep it around, we eat it ourselves. We don't mention anything to them. And pretty soon, they're modeling, they're doing that. Beef jerky, organic beef jerky, even at Walmart. Salted nuts are wonderful to have around. And keep around a lot of fruit, particularly grapes and those types of things. For more ideas about these types of things, the book that we're talking about is Enzymes for Autism and Other Neurological Diseases, the mother who had migraines and decided to change her diet. Just many more ideas in this, and there are many books out there. So let's just look at this exploring diet a little bit more. We want to reduce color and preservatives in packaged food by making more from scratch. Remember Dr. Ben Feingold from many years ago? He was the first doctor to see the association between what a child ate and their behavior. The Feingold diet is still a very popular diet. It doesn't go far enough for our kids because it doesn't hit the sugars, but it's still an incredibly good place to go. And I've had many parents that say when we started watching coloring and started getting more natural things, the changes they see. And you know, we have real unnatural things out there, like, you know, blue Gatorade, you know, and the yellow dyes. They're all so hard on their nervous system. Why? They have an improper detoxification system. So instead of, you know, in and out, what happens is it stays and it accumulates and it becomes a neurotoxin. So the fewer toxins we can put in, the healthier kids we have. And remember, whether it's ADD, ADHD, SI, Asperger's, or autism, it's a sick kid. And we're going to treat the sickness, the toxin overload, and then we can help them feel better. What are some easy things we do? You know many of these. This is just a review for you. But crock-pot dinners are easy and fast to make. Many of us are working. So it's so hard to then think about making a dinner. It's easier to get a package that you can put in the microwave. But if you would, the night before, get those big crock pots so you don't have to thaw any of the meat out. We'll take the frozen, you know, the beef roast or whatever, and just put in the carrots and onions and potatoes the night before. And then in the morning, you just plug it in. You come home to this wonderful smell. We often get two nights of dinner with that, or at least next day lunch. Kids love that when they are exposed to it. And it just, again, works for the nervous system. All sorts of things. You can even make spaghetti in a crock pot. You know, they have whole crock pot dinners. The reason we talk about that is that it's easy to do. Popcorn, if you can, in a heavy saucepan with coconut oil for a great taste. Again, just looking for ways to pull toxins out of their system. When you become aware of that, suddenly you realize they have pretty much all day of toxins, don't they? So if you know it's a guarantee at school, then do what you can at home. Whole oatmeal with honey and cinnamon. Did you know that cinnamon is a wonderful natural antifungal? And it just tastes wonderful. So the more cinnamon you can put on anything, it just kills that fungus. So that's delicious and nutritious for them. And this is, we're going to talk later on about enzymes, but just a huge breakthrough in that parents are finding in the differences in their children's digestion and how they behave. And their enzymes, of course, first come from raw foods, don't they? So if you can, make sure that your child has some raw food every day. And just, you know, before you go to bed, say, did they get raw food today? Do you know that even the standard American diet, which as we know, let's just look at that, the standard American diet, what are the initials for that? Technology isn't perfect, is it? Or could it be? Show you what the standard American diet. We're going to have to see that joke right now, I think, because he wants to show himself. The standard American diet is called SAP. that interesting? Sad. So this, I just think that's so amazing that that we have, that's what we have with the standard American diet is really not much raw food. So if you can have a salad or veggies or apples, the standard American diet says that we need 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day to be healthy. You really keep track of that. It's hard to get in, isn't it? So if the standard American diet says that, how much more we want to do? So Hagar, you saw this, is just wonderful. He says, I'm going to give you an easy one-word answer to all your health problems. What is it, doctor? What is it? Diet. Do you have any easier one-word answers? Isn't that hard? Because we use food for lots of things, comfort, lots of things other than feeding. But these parents, any parent who has a child who has successfully treated this child, knows all about diet. In fact, we have, I always call kids either dyslexic, they're untreated dyslexic, because when they're older, their spelling is just atrocious because we haven't shown them how to use their photographic memory, or a treated dyslexic. We can see the difference. And, well, there are untreated kids who have autism, Asperger's, and treated children. I had the wonderful privilege of having a mom several months ago, and she brought her just lovely boy. And as we were working on learning issues the whole time, and she was, as we were talking, and she said, you know, would you consider any of the symptoms he has Asperger's? And I said, are even autistic? And I said, you know what? I wouldn't, as I go down and look at her, I'm not seeing that. And she said, that's what I see too. She said he was labeled full-blown, true autistic, had all the symptoms. You know what she did? She did everything we're talking about today. She did gluten-free, dairy-free, she did the antifungals, she did the vitamins. And he was there. Yep, he had some learning issues that I could help him through with reading, with writing, and with spelling, but he didn't need that. So many times parents come in thinking their children have just an ADD or some issues, and they really have lots of the symptoms on the spectrum that we know that we can help them with. But her son had no symptoms on the spectrum that I could see, and I'm certainly not the final expert at all, but I think I might have seen some of them. So a treated child will give a completely different picture. And she was just, I said, well, you're just an example of exactly what we have been seeing. So this is Dennis Jimenez, always gets down to the bottom line. He says, uh-oh, mom's reading labels. That means we're gonna have a health food dinner. Now, what would be the opposite of a health food dinner? Sick food dinner? I mean, you know, when you think about the reciprocal, right? The reciprocal maybe is that. So with that sums up the portion of one of the things that we find in common with all these children is gastrointestinal issues. Did the gastrointestinal issues start first? No, we think it came as a result of an impaired immune system. The immune system and the commonality these kids have also, besides every one of them has some gastrointestinal, shouldn't really say everyone, most of them, is the immune system malfunction. Their immune system is on overload from the time they're born and likely from in utero. Now we need to know how to identify them. So what do we see with these kids with immune system malfunction? We see the allergic reactions are much more prevalent in these children. And if the parents aren't recognizing them, every now and then I'll get a questionnaire and I'll say, is this child allergic to anything? They said, no, nothing that we can see. And yet they're presenting all these other symptoms of learning and behavior. So we know they're allergic. Why? Because histamine is a tremendous neurotoxin. And we're gonna talk a lot more about the neurotoxin of histamine and what it does. The immune system, they have many more autoimmune system issues with these children. And in the families, they have more diabetes, more thyroid problems, more lupus. We see that even with dyslexia. We see more autoimmune issues. We know the immune system is hard. If you want to turn that up a little bit, the heat, is it cold? Feel free to play with that. No, you're not the only one. Thank you. Food allergies in these kids are much more severe. They have much bigger reactions. They will have just a whole meltdown. The food allergy. We're going to talk later on about pH, how histamine is so acid, and how a whole goal is to keep them non-acid. And so The whole goal is when they have a histamine reaction, the gas that is so high that we need to alkalize that as fast as we can. And Dr. Marianne Block, in her book, No More Ritalin, she has her water, not water cure, her blockcenter.com. She talks about a young man, a mother called in, and the young man was just having an absolute rage and was out of control. And she said, what should I do? And she said, get some Alka-Seltzer Gold, which is Alka-Seltzer in a gold package. Not like my mom said, my husband went out and got Alka-Seltzer Cold and it didn't help. That would be with cold medicine. We don't know what that would all do. But gold is just potassium and sodium. And the potassium is just there to balance the sodium. She said, give that to him. And she called back and she said, 20 minutes, his behavior had changed. I had a family from California come. They had five boys. Michael was the oldest one. And Michael ruled the world for that family. This mother said many times she would be out shopping and she would be have to leave her cart and leave with all the boys because Michael had just a meltdown just in the store, all the stimuli, that was it, he was just done. And so I said, you know, we're gonna do the antifungal, everything to take all the elephants off their nervous immune system so they could function with the world of stimuli and not melt down. He said, meanwhile, why don't you carry some Alka-Seltzer Gold in your purse and water? Then she emailed back. I've gotten several emails from her. I have seen them a year ago. And she said, I can't believe the difference. She said, I have to tell you, I've never had to leave a cart in a store again. As soon as Michael just begins to twitch a little bit, looking like he may have a meltdown, she said, we go plop, plop, fizz, fizz. And he drinks it, and that's it. Alka-Seltzer Gold is a savior for many people. If you have an allergic reaction, or you have those funny reactions when you feel like, oh, I think I'm having a heart attack, you know, where you have all those symptoms of reflux and such, Alka-Seltzer Gold will alkalize because it's an acid, and acid has a lot of issues that are real harmful to our body. But what we didn't know is that acid affects behavior. Histamine affects behavior. And we've known this sort of for 20 years and lost it a little bit, but the more affected these kids are, the more allergic they are, and the bigger their reactions. For them, immunization, the adverse reaction to that are much more common, where they'll have an immunization and the baby will just scream for days, or just can't sleep for days. They have a physical reaction to their immune system being assaulted by a virus so that the immune system could respond by creating an antibody, but it can't respond because what we really need is a gauge on these guys. The immune system, low, quart low, 2 quarts low, none there. And then we would know, wouldn't we, what to do, how to help them. Now, Dr. Philpott calls these cerebral allergies that really contribute to abnormal behaviors. Cerebral allergies are the fact that the allergen is affecting their nervous system and they don't have any physical reactions. That is the thing that we have to keep in mind. It's not the typical runny nose, eczema, all those kinds of things. It's a physical, it's an abnormal behavior. So much so, cerebral allergies are so much so. There was a study recently done where they took schizophrenics who were intractable schizophrenics. They were in the hospital and they'd been there for 10 years and couldn't go to halfway houses because they were so brittle with their meds. So we would go on the scale, wouldn't pass autism, wouldn't be the end of the most affected would be a schizophrenic. We know they are the most allergic people in the world, the most toxic people we have. So what they did is they said, we think that likely histamine is a big player here. So they took half of that group that couldn't move on, and they gave them a gluten-free, dairy-free diet. And of course, because they were controlling the diet, their intake, it was real easy for them to calibrate. The other group, they let eat the regular lots of bread, which they did in the institution. And after a period of time, they were able to send out 65% of the adults who were gluten-free, dairy-free, could go into halfway houses because now their meds were working, they were stable. So those, and that is just one study. If you just ever want to Google just to find out schizophrenia and allergies, you will have, you'll find many, many studies like this done by Dr. Hoffer, Dr. Pfeiffer. Many years ago, this has been known. They call it orthomolecular medication, orthomolecular psychiatry, meaning we're not just going to treat the head, let's treat what's going on in the body. Some forward-thinking physicians have done that. Some of the physical symptoms, of course, of allergies in a child, those are easy to read. Stomach aches. What would we think of with that? We think of dairy allergy, wouldn't we? Dark circles under the eyes. I've had so many parents. They say, remember we talked about the warts falling off? They said, dark circles are gone. I couldn't believe it. It went away. So we hear that a lot. First of all, we hear it with antifungal. If we don't hear it with antifungal, we will hear it when they take off the proper allergen. Bedwetting. Many times children wet the bed because of a dairy. I had a 14-year-old named Carl, and he was wetting the bed every night, and he was just, of course, mortified. For him, when we took the fungus off, he didn't wet the bed anymore because the fungus will cause, for women, often chronic cystitis. And what it will do is it irritates not just the gut lining, it'll irritate the bladder lining, just like it'll irritate the vaginal lining, irritate the rectum. I mean, wherever tissue it hits, it inflames. And so he was just thrilled. Then I had a boy named Luke, and he was 8 years old. And he wet the bed every night, too, and the mother was just, she had tried lots of things. He was just about nine. And the antifungal therapy helped him so that his bedwetting was better, but it wasn't gone. And I said, well, likely, you know, the number two would be dairy. She took him off all dairy products, and she said he was thrilled. He was dry every night. Then I got an email later on, and she said, well, Luke loves being dry, but he really misses drinking his milk. What should he do? I said, well, you know, he's eight. He can decide by now. Drink milk, wet the bed, let him change it himself. Or don't drink milk, don't wet the bed. Wouldn't it be a nice choice? Maybe eight is too young for him to care. He will soon, won't he? Now he knows the answer. So I said, you know what, honey, if you really want that milk, you go right ahead. Let him figure it out himself. He'll decide that. But you, as I say, you know the answer. Constant sniffling, sometimes parents don't even notice as we're sitting there for 5 hours, and I hear that all the time. Say, so do they sniffle all the time, or are they just getting over a cold? Because it could be that. What's sniffling? I said, oh yeah, the one that they're doing all the time. Eczema. Eczema is it's either going to be the fungus or the dairy. And asthma are chronic bronchitis. If we would get all our children who had asthma off of dairy, we would make a huge leap forward. If we could get rid of the fungus, we would just make a huge leap forward in the amount of medicine we don't have to use, the amount of steroids we don't have to use. And we don't know if we get rid of it all the way or not. All we know is we can make a big dent. Dr. Batman Gelich has a book called Your Body's Many Cries for Water. And in there, he has treated many, many, many cases. That would be watercure.com. Many, many cases where he has treated asthma and gotten rid of it just using a rehydration program. Salt and water. Salt is a natural antihistamine. Remember we were talking about Alka-Seltzer Gold, aren't we? And that's also a sodium. And in fact, in that book, you'll find many letters from physicians whose own children had allergic rhinitis or asthma or coughs, chronic coughs. And this one mom wrote in, and she was a physician. She said, I can't believe the difference in Jeremy's asthma. She said he was needing to take medicine all the time for cough. She said, now just 4 weeks into the rehydration program of doing half his body weight in ounces of water and adding a half a teaspoon of sea salt to his daily, whatever he ate. And oftentimes kids just love to lick it off their hand. And she said, with that, not only is the allergic rhinitis gone, so is his cough, and we can get him off the medication that was making him drowsy in school. She said, not only do we see these subjective reactions, we see objective reactions. She said his flow chart, his, what do we call it, his peak meter, peak flow meter, when he fills it, she says it's just, it's normal where it's supposed to be. So acid, remember, causes all sorts of allergies. Our allergies, histamine is acid. And alkalizing is a real big part of what helps. What are some other allergy symptoms? In the intestinal system, it would be, you know, GERD, that the esophageal reflux. Like we were talking about our six-month-olds who have Zantac. Wouldn't you love to give that little six-month-old some acidophilus and change their formula if it's a milk-based formula? We would change that if their mother is nursing. We'd have mothers stop drinking dairy and just stop that little baby from having so much acid reflux. Diarrhea, of course, we recognize as an allergy. Stomach aches, constipation, nausea. Orally, swelling of the throat. Lots of these kids can't swallow or say they can't swallow. Swallowing's hard for them because their throat always is wanting to be irritated, just on the point of constricting. Tearing of the eyes, of course, you would see that. Congestion, sneezing, rhinitis, always those kinds of symptoms. Those are typical. How do we see the symptoms, these allergy symptoms, affecting educationally? Well, inconsistent performance. When parents say, I think they have a learning disability because one day they can read just fine and the next day everything flips around. But remember, we don't get rid of a disability in a day and we don't get a disability in a day. So there's another factor. Histamine is a huge player in things that we didn't realize. Attention, focus, of course, but also reading issues, auditory processing problems. Because auditory processing problems, it just precludes, it assumes that what is happening is you're able to hear and all of the mechanisms are working well. But if you have so much fluid in your ear, and it's a very viscous fluid, you don't hear as well. So very inconsistent performance. Poor memory. Appears lazy and unmotivated. Often have a dyslexia. And they have the focus difficulty. And remember, I had told you earlier about the dad who came to the door and said, if you do nothing else for us, we've already changed our lives. And that was a little girl who made her 2-year jump just by taking dairy away. That's not an everyday occurrence. But we flake it when it comes. It's nice. But do we see a change many times? Yep, it's worth a try. Absolutely worth a try. Dr. Marianne Block has this in her book, in her Noma Ritalin. This is a young boy named Mike. And he wrote his name, he wrote it very nicely, and then she gave what he was allergic to. Doris Rapp has many of this, is this your child also? Many of these kinds of examples. Look at what he did total mirror writing. He didn't just turn around a letter. Mirror writing after he got what he was allergic to. What we know is that histamine wants to make an interference between the communication between the left and right hemisphere, and it becomes a mirror basically, and all of a sudden everything looks backwards. We see this many times, and so as they kept trying to neutralize that. So what are the behavioral symptoms of allergies in children? Well, meltdowns. Meltdowns are what? Remember, first we think fungus, but why is fungus? Fungus is creating histamine, and that's causing the allergy reaction. And so can others. Blockcenter.com. Poor concentration. Sensory dysfunction. It's these kids who are hypersensitive to everything are hyposensitive. Often react so well to getting rid of the allergen. Spaciness. Something we hear a lot. Again, either with the fungus. If I get rid of all the spaciness with the fungus, antifungal diet, then that's fine. We don't have to go further. But for many of these children, we do have to go further, depending on where the symptoms are. Irritability. Have you ever had an allergic reaction during the summer? Something flies around in the air. You know, you just aren't feeling at your best, are you? You're just hard to get along with. It's just, you irritates because histamine's an acid. It irritates your nervous system. Hyperactivity, because all of a sudden get hyper. We wonder what's going on, and we look and see, what did they eat last? Parents, keep a diary. Just keep a diary of their food, and you'll find out that, in fact, that's one of the very first things you could do. If I were a school nurse and a parent, I was in a staffing and this child had aberrant or inconsistent behavior, first thing I would do is say, would you consider keeping a food diary? And let's just see, and we will at school too, what snacks they get. And let's just see if something triggers it. Some days are really good, and other days aren't. Let's find out what is going in, because it's probably all about food. Sleep disturbances, and of all things, they found arm flapping, head banging, perseverating, all of that gets better when we take off the allergen. Why? Because it's histamine. Histamine is what's released when you have an allergic reaction. And histamine is a very powerful neuromodulator. It is basically a neurotoxin. A neurotoxin of a huge degree. And that's what we're learning. How huge that neurotoxin is and what it all affects. So histamine, what does it do? We talked about how it reduces the ability of the left and right brain hemispheres to work together, which is why we can get symptoms that look like dyslexia. Remember we saw the slide about that young man who was copying that verse, and then after antifungal treatment, he could write right on the lines. Suddenly the lines were there for him. What does histamine do? It causes inflammation. One of the hallmarks of all these children we have is inflammation of the gut, inflammation of the nervous system, inflammation. And so if it's not a virus or a bacteria, and we've gotten rid of the fungus, we think, what's going on with histamine? But if you have a lot of histamine, it creates excess mucus. And lots of our kids have that. What do we do when they create excess mucus? They prescribe Claritin or Allegra to dry it up. Okay, so we've taken care of the exit point again, haven't we? But we've not taken care of what that does. Almost all the children that I see that were on Allegra or Claritin don't have to be on it. And so I'm only one of thousands. They don't have to be on it if we are taking care of the allergen. So in other words, a Claritin or Allegra isn't answering why they're having all the other issues. It just dries them up, as they say. It's manufactured in the gut by the mast cells when we have histamine, and it's an acid. Do you know that all anti-ulcer medicine is antihistamine? Because ulcers are caused by that acid. So let's look at some of the causes of allergies. Well, we know, once again, our boys get three times more than girls. We know that our boys are more immune compromised than girls. The UCLA School of Medicine found that boys have a three times higher need for essential fatty acids than girls. Essential fatty acids, according to Dr. Leo Galland of Super Immunity for Kids and many others, essential fatty acids are at the crux of the immune system. When girls are determined to be girls in utero, we know that estrogen is fired. And estrogen is, of course, a fatty carrier because it makes eggs. But we know that when boys are determined to be boys, testosterone is fired and it's not a fatty carrier. And in fact, in her study, Dr. Jacqueline Storti's study, on the incidence of dyslexics more in boys and girls, she found that she studied the families of dyslexics and she said that those families not only had more autoimmune or immune system issues, which that we knew 20 years ago, she found that it was caused by an essential fatty acid deficiency. They needed many more oils than anybody else. The deficiency was passed on, and it looked like the dyslexia was passed on. Really, she did double-blind placebo-controlled studies, and it was very interesting the changes that they were able to see. So more boys and girls, because more boys, immune system is it. And I know for those of you who work with kids who are struggle with learning our behavior, boys, bigger part of your population, isn't it? Been working with them for 35 years, and I should remember about the name of every little girl I worked with because I didn't see a lot of them. What are one of the other causes of allergies? We know it's from the leaky gut because protein has to go be undigested and has to get into the bloodstream, and it gets through that permeable gut lining that has been made leaky. Really, we consider it probably by the yeast overgrowth of fungus. We know that that's what happens. It makes little leaks in there. And then what would be a normal protein, good protein for everybody, but for them, undigested, because we have not the good bacteria in there, not the good enzymes in there, goes through the gut, and some of it gets into the bloodstream, and that's not where it's supposed to be. And we see big reactions for these guys. But it's another cause, of course, heredity. But we're finding it isn't just genes. With heredity, it's what deficiency did we pass down? Once we know that, we can change things. Oh, it's another cause of allergy. Is dairy given too early, or mainly dairy given with multiple antibiotic use. The scenario I see all the time is that the child had some antibiotics early on, as I say, either because swallowed some meconium or some amniotic fluid, the various reasons that they believe that they have an infection, and they're treated early on with an antibiotic. And then the parent decides to, because of working or such, she only nurses them for about 3 weeks, and then needs to give them a formula. And pretty soon, within 2 months, they're getting their first ear infection because they couldn't digest the protein, the casein in the dairy, because the antibiotics had used up the good enzymes and the good bacteria in there. It's just such a common scenario that if a child is given a lot of antibiotics, we're going to find an allergy to the first food that they have that's not mom's milk, and that generally is just regular cow's milk, which is one of the reasons I think we just have a larger population that is allergic to dairy, don't we? I mean, you see non-dairy items everywhere now. It used to be that you had to go to a health food store, and now we're even seeing gluten-free items everywhere now, aren't we? Why is that? Do you know that the whole world, the whole system of marketing is built on money, right? So it revolves around money. So if it wasn't a moneymaker, of course they wouldn't carry it. Why do they carry it? Because the increase has been tremendous. So again, we just talk about unopposed antibiotics. We like what antibiotics do in terms of healing. We're not against them by any means, but those things that see it, you can, with your next children you have or your grandchildren, you'll know things like that. If they had early antibiotic use and you'll make sure it's not unopposed, then you'll say, let's put off dairy introduction for a long time. Give that child's immune system time to come back. Give them some good oils to get that immune system working. Then they can handle it, and they won't have consistent problems with it. Another big cause of allergies are children who are given immunizations when they're sick. This is just an expediency matter. A mother takes her child in, they're young, a baby in, an infant in, or a toddler, and they have a cold, or looks like an ear infection, they're not feeling well. And they check the temperature, maybe say, no, this is just a virus, they'll get over it, we're not going to prescribe antibiotics. And yet, then they say, oh, but while they're here, let's catch them up on their shots. So what they're saying is, while their immune system's already whacked, it's already fighting this virus, let's give it a few more germs to fight. And it collapses. It says, I can't do it. It absorbs the immunization, whatever it was, it absorbs it in the body and has to deal with it versus creating the antibody, which it was intended to. So immunizations get us in just big trouble with a child who has a compromised immune system or a child who has a borderline immune system, and we give the shots when they're sick. And that's probably one of the biggest things. If we could get doctor's offices to do that, you know, it's not usually the doctor who brings it up, it's usually the office personnel who's checking off to make sure every one of those lovely little immunizations are there, because we wouldn't want to give the child a break, you know, or anything. Let's just get them all in there, make sure they get them all on time, sick or not. I mean, nobody thinks that way, of course. They're all being kind-hearted, but that's the way it turns out for kids. So those are things that we want to watch out for, so that we don't just say, no, you know what, they're not feeling good. It would be worth a trip back for me to come in 2 weeks or 3 weeks and have this when they're feeling good. So if we could just get moms to know that, wouldn't that just be a big thing? So let's look at what we can do to reduce allergies, and we've talked a lot about this already. Let's reduce the amount of histamine in the body using water and salt. I had a mom who, after she had heard one of these talks, she said her son had asthma and yet had had a really good winter, so they didn't need their inhaler a lot. It was spring, and they decided to go on a bike riding trip. And she said they were not a long trip, just out of the house and down the road and away from their house at any rate. They were out on some dirt roads, and he began having an asthma attack. And he couldn't get that mucus plug up. Was so scary. She knew that she was far away from the house, but she knew around the corner was a little bitty country cafe. And she went there, and he took salt and put it on his hand and licked it and took a drink of water, and that salt immediately dissolved the mucus plug. And we see this all the time. People who have asthma should carry some salt in their purse, because a lick of salt will help. We have lots of children who have a compromised immune system, so thus their adrenal gland is working too hard. Remember, the adrenal gland puts out cortisol for allergies, but also, you know, aldosterone is involved in that. That is the salt-retaining hormone. So many kids will just, these kids will crave salt. In fact, when they're wanting to eat sugar, they'd really much rather have salt. Oftentimes they'll just, a little reward, they'll put a little sea salt, which is full of minerals, right on their hand, and they'll lick it off and they'll feel happy. But what's happening is their adrenal gland needs salt. Dr. David Brownstein, is his website, Brownstein, drbrownstein.com, and he has many books out, but one of it is Salt Your Way to Health. And he said people come to his clinic in Michigan and most of the kids are low in salt. And he starts feeding them the sea salt and they just respond so well. Salt has gotten a bad reputation, hasn't it? Because everybody has hypertension. Well, this is what they decided, and they have, actually the studies have shown only 10% of those with hypertension are salt responders. How about all the people without hypertension? So we're all having too little salt. Everybody's salt-free. When I see my children and in the clinic and we talk about giving salt, I hear again so many times they love the salt, and boy, does that calm them down. Or boy, do they feel better right away. Or clears up the throat. I mean, there are all sorts of positives to that. So it may be something you just want to explore. But salt is a natural antihistamine. Remember when your babies were little and they couldn't nurse, so they couldn't feed because they had a stuffy nose? What did you do? You did what? Saline solutions. Because saline does what? Cuts up the mucus. It dissolves mucus. It still does. But salt is much more of a friend than we ever thought before. Particularly sea salt. Much better, of course, than the other salt that doesn't have any minerals in it. Sea salt is good, too. It has a little bit of a sweet taste to it. So that's, there are just actually whole entire talks one could do on reducing histamine using salt. But now you know if that's what your interest is, now you know where to find more information about that. But these children are very acid. And we need to get them alkaline and keeping in all their minerals. And that's one way to do it. But how else can we reduce allergies? Remove the main allergen. Well, you may say, I had them tested, they are allergic to 25 things. Well, one of the 25 things is peanuts. We need to keep them away from that, don't we? But otherwise, maybe we could say, okay, instead of really just changing the diet entirely, maybe let's start with the main allergen at once. And the dairy would be the main allergen. If you're going to do a dairy-free trial, they suggest to do it for 6 weeks. Now, we don't have to look at where dairy is in bread or cookies, not unless you have a child on the autistic spectrum who's very reactive. They do read all labels. But otherwise, you can just say, okay, I'm going to just replace the regular foods. Like instead of milk, we're going to use the substitutes. There are all sorts of milk substitutes. Rice milk is a good substitute. Soy isn't. But when we're going to talk about gluten-free, dairy-free, they have found these kids respond by soy-free too. And Dr. Neil Gallen found that over 80% of the children who are allergic to dairy are allergic to soy. And so it's not a good substitute on a regular basis. So, you know, get like a rice milk and you say, okay, what about cheeses? They have wonderful substitute cheeses out there too. And they have great substitute ice creams that taste good. Sherbet isn't one of them. That is skim milk that still has a casein in it. But sorbets and rice dream and all sorts of good ones like that. So let's say that you replace those three for 6 weeks and you would just have your child make a game of it, just mark it on the calendar, and after 6 weeks, deliberately put it back in. And this is what we have our parents do, and they see, and they can get to see the differences. So remove that main allergy if you can. The other thing that we need to do to reduce allergies, as we talked about, is heal that leaky gut with antifungals and with enzymes so that they don't remain so allergic. Because we have found that removing the allergens really tremendously helps these children. But they can't go to a birthday party if having a birthday cake and such. Now these parents consider that small price to pay for a child who looks them in the eye and speaks to them and isn't just running in circles and whose behavior is so aberrant because they're feeling so out of sorts. For them, that's a small price to pay. And I would say for me, it would be too. But maybe we don't have to pay that price. Maybe there are things that we can do for the occasional, as they call, infractions. And of course, less processed food and more raw. Raw food contains the enzymes that not only will cause that food to be broken down. In other words, it's not using the enzymes from the body. It contains the enzymes that make that food be used. Not only that, it has enough enzymes in it to clear up debris from other food that hasn't been digested. Do you know we all heard of secretin or secretin? These children who all of a sudden began speaking, autistic children began speaking in the doctor's office when they gave them secretin, which is the pancreatic hormone secreted by a pig's gut, basically. And they gave it as a preparation for a test. And they realized that it was just phenomenal. And so, of course, the big search was for how to get secretin for your children. And it was, you know, basically black market kind of thing, because it was only used for tests to see if they had diabetes or such. So they gave them the test. Remember how they would have them fast for a test and they found, oh, their behaviors got so much better when they first realized it was food behavior? Well, they gave them this secretin, this injection, and whoop, all of a sudden it's amazing. Their speech just came like right in the office. In fact, when I was in California about 5 years ago, Riverside, California, speaking to a group, I spoke after a psychiatrist who used all meds, and then I gave my talk, and then afterwards a 60-year-old doctor talked about the fact that he was seeing a lot of children with autism and how he had used the secretin to preparation to see whether or not they had diabetes, etc. He said right in his office, he saw all the speech come. What happened? What's that? It's the pancreas is what's making the enzymes. These children have no enzymes. It just ate so much of the debris, is what we're thinking. Nobody really knows. I'm speculating, as is everybody else. We don't know what really happened. But enzymes are very important. So the less processed food, so just, you know, these parents would make it their job to watch their grocery cart. And when they check out, does your grocery cart look nice? Because it has all sorts of greens and reds and colors in it, or is it just the colorful packages? And that's what you just be able to grow on that quest to do more of that. The parents who have children who were nonverbal do this to the nth degree because the price they pay is nothing compared to the reward they see. We're talking about on the whole line of spectrum, starting with ADD, how much do we need to do? Whatever you can do will be better. Whatever non-processed food you can have, whatever real food, will be better for the child than not. How else can we reduce allergies? We're going to talk later on about essential fatty acids, which is basically the immune system in many ways. Remember, it's also the serotonin system. So if we see so many more children needing Ritalin now, this is so interesting. When I was teaching, we now have, of course, sustained release medication, so we don't see this a lot. But when I remember the years when I was teaching, when they needed their mid-dose Ritalin, and we could tell when they didn't have it. Well, as we would see in the elementary schools when I would teach, we didn't have a school nurse, so the secretary was giving everybody their Ritalin, legal or not, that's what was going on. And so we would notice each year the line growing longer for kids to come to get their mid-dose of Ritalin from the secretary. As we noticed that, the line got longer every year for kids to get their inhaler prior to gym class. Why? Because it is affecting two systems, the serotonin system and the immune system. Essential fatty acids are just huge. And if there's one thing we have really manipulated very seriously in our country, and that's fats. We put an extra hydrogen atom in there to give it a longer shelf life, and the hydrogenated totally changes the nature of what it does. How else can we reduce allergies? I don't know how many of you know about NAET. is Nevudripod's allergy elimination treatment, and that is something that many parents swear by. In many of these books, the parents do that. It eliminates the allergies enough so that they can really function in the world, even though maybe they don't have the offending food all the time. For kids who have a mild issue, it gets rid of it enough so that they probably can have the food again. For kids who have a major issue with it in terms of behaviors and such, parents generally keep them away from the food just as much as they can, but then they can handle infractions. Sometimes the NAET works wonderfully, other times it's just okay, but it's always worth a try because of the wonderful stories that we hear. Dr. Nevudripod was a doctor from India, and she found out that there are just different systems in the body that react to allergens because of the energy reaction. And so she uses acupuncture, or acupressure is what that uses. So a chiropractor or somebody who can do that. I was working with a gal one time with just chronic sinus infections. And I said, well, you know, Mayo Clinic says most of the time that's a fungus. So we use a grapefruit seed extract nasal spray. She used it internally. She said, oh, it helped, but it wasn't a big improvement. She still has these incredible sinus headaches. Then said, well, the second would be dairy. And so she was real religious about taking all dairy out of her diet. She said, yep, that helped even more. But she still have about every other day just a crushing sinus headache. So she found a practitioner of NAET, who, and there are varying expertise in that. Some know more than others, so it isn't just necessarily every NAET practitioner, but so she went there, and she said that was it. She got cleared of her dairy allergy. So are these things worth trying? I would say sure, if it's first do no harm, other than to your pocketbook, right? It would be. You have to go for several. What we don't realize, not only that salt is an incredibly good, cheap, effective, every day, you carry in your purse, antihistamine, so is vitamin C. They had found, even as I say, 20 years ago, Dr. Pfeiffer and Dr. Hoffman found that for schizophrenics. The only reason we mention them is that's as toxic, as high histamine as you can get. When they gave them, of course, it would be like 25 grams, which we know 1,000 milligrams in a gram. They got that much. Behaviors changed. All words changed. Those types of things. With these children, we know that the more vitamin C you can give them, that's buffered. Otherwise, vitamin C would be acid. They do so well in. How can you do that? You can just get those emergency packets. Have you seen them? Those wonderful, good-tasting little packets. They have 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C in. Get them in various flavors every time children have water. Just put vitamin C in there. And that's just a real inexpensive one. I would do that before I do Claritin or Allegra. That's going to dry up their system and affect their kidneys. I mean, I would try these things first, and I would leave that for days when they're just miserable. But vitamin C is something, for little kids who put it in popsicles, or what parents do is they will, when mom she made it in some juice and she froze it in the little ice cube trays, you know, he would just have them all day long, thought he was having popsicles, but that's how we got rid of a lot of the allergic rhinitis for him. So reducing allergies is a big goal that we have, especially for these wonderful struggling kids. Camel is designed to carry a lot of bundles. A child is designed to be able to have a lot of things not go well and still be okay, but too many and they collapse. One of the things that we're going to look at taking away is the yeast and mold as much as we can, doing an antifungal. Then we're going to all work on reducing sugar and junk food. And we know, of course, every time we do that, we know that. This is just a different awareness level that this is incredibly toxic for kids, and we can see a change in them. Then we're going to talk the rest of the time about the nutritional deficiencies that all of this toxin load causes. And food allergies, as we talked about now. Food allergies can cause a child's behavior to be so huge that you just think that they have like a mental illness. And like we saw with Dr. Howard's Roger Staubach's life, I mean, just huge depression. These things aren't small. So let's look at the dietary interventions that these parents are doing to help their child to feel better. And one is elimination, and we call it elimination and challenge, like we talked about with the dairy. 6 weeks off, and the doctor, Marianne Block, in her book No More Ritalin, says 6 weeks off and not one teaspoon. Because it's a malfunctioning alert system, a malfunctioning immune system. And it says, incoming, incoming, red alert, red alert, and histamine is just sent off, and the whole body reacts, and it was just a teaspoon. It isn't reacting correctly. And so it's a teaspoon if you can. In other words, it's not, okay, we're just going to cut back. So many times I'll have parents say, oh yeah, we really cut back on dairy. They won't see anything until they actually stop the dairy totally for that 6 week time. And that's an important piece of information to know, isn't it? Because many times we say elimination diet, we think, okay, yeah, we're not doing much of it. Think of it as arsenic. Only a teaspoon of arsenic, that's all he's getting a day. You know, for him, that's all it takes. So that's why you have to do it in a decided, deliberate manner with your child on your side, and they do that. Of course, if they're smaller, you get by. The younger they are, the easier that is. We're going to talk about, we're going to explore further the gluten-free casein diet. Because that's it's a really big part of treating children on the spectrum. One of the first things that all parents found that it almost was a universal responder. Varying levels, I think the levels vary by how much fungus that parent was able to get rid of first. The GFCFdiet.com is still a very good resource for you to tell your parents about, because in there they have parent testimonials about how things worked. And it'll encourage your parents that it's worth trying. When they put GF and CF together, the gluten-free and casein-free, which is casein, the name, of course, of the protein in the dairy that they're reacting to, I wouldn't do them both at the same time. I wouldn't know then what's doing what. I would start with the casein first, and then later on go to the gluten and find out so that you know. And in fact, there's a story. Debbie has Debbie's Gluten-Free Bakery, and she had a family member, a distant family member, who had a child, and she was 10 years old. And this little girl became so toxic through something. She was reading, and as she was reading, she would have visual hallucinations. She saw blood coming out of the book and dripping around. So the mother took her child to the pediatrician. He said, oh my, she has early childhood onset schizophrenia. We need to begin to treat that. So they did, of course, Thorazine, Risperdal, all the heavy medications. Nothing got better. She ended up in a group home down in Colorado Springs. One time they called and they said, we're going to have to change her medications again. She just isn't, you know, responding, breakthrough, violence, etc. And so she said, I'm going to bring her home. I have been doing some research. And she did the gluten-free and casein-free diet, both of them, wham, all at once. And she said it took 3 days. Within 3 days, she had no more hallucinations, visual or auditory. And she said she never has since. She's now 12 years old, in school, doing just fine. So it really tells you that lots of these things that look like they're really, really big can affect them. So what she found is that the casein, she said later on, I put the dairy back in. There was no reaction, nothing. That wasn't the problem. Gluten back in, she said, boy, that really made issues with her. So casein and gluten often don't have to go together. But you'll have a lot of parents looking into that. Remember we said the parents say, but I can't do the casein gluten-free diet because my child only eats casein and gluten. So remember what we do? We smuggle. We take whatever, remember we said pitiful little foods that they will have, and we're going to put our supplements in there. We're going to change a child's chemistry. Then we can go on this other step. I don't usually start with the gluten-free. We're going to talk also about the specific carbohydrate diet for some parents, that's just the ticket, and so it's something that we can try. In fact, doesn't that have a wonderful website, pecanbread.com? Just love the website. As soon as I saw that, I had to look it up. And what they do is they're specific carbohydrate. They don't have any carbohydrates, which is the problem with gluten-free. The the gluten substitutes are way too many carbohydrates for a lot of these kids for the fungus part. And so with the specific carbohydrate, they make their breads and such out of nuts. Now, if your child has a nut allergy, you can't do that diet. But if they don't have a nut allergy, you can imagine how tasty it is. But it's a newer one. So we're going to take a break here at 6:30, and we come back, we're going to look at all these different dietary interventions. Let's look at the elimination diet and the science behind the elimination diet. But remember that this is results oriented. Everything that we're going to talk about are parents who tried it and saw differences in their children, and then the medical and nutritional community said, okay, yeah, we'll work with you. But they're the ones that figured it out. They're the heroes of all of this. It says scientific studies support the theory that a food allergy sensitivity may be a primary etiology of ADHD or contribute to the symptoms. ADHD is a degree of overlap with autism, so it seems wise to rule out possible food allergies in children with autism. Elizabeth Strickland is one of the dietitians that talked about that. So even if science wouldn't agree, parents would, wouldn't they? So children with autism, we know, are more negatively affected by the symptoms of food allergy due to their problems with sensory integration dysfunction. So what do? We talked about the six-week elimination trial. The key that we said that was news for us to have is not one teaspoon for that 6 weeks. And Norma Riddle and Dr. Marianne Bloch talks about that a lot. It's talked about in many places. I'm just giving you one site per so that you could look it up. There are many other areas. We're going to begin with the most common allergen, which is dairy. And next, if you see a good result with that, or let's say you don't see a good result with that, then you're going to go on and try a gluten. Do you know that, frankly, we found that most people don't do well with gluten? Most people would do better without it, the less gluten there is. And there have been, again, lots of studies on that, and it's just something that people have naturally eliminated from their diet when they have stomach aches. So when we talk about gluten, I think of the word WORB, W-O-R-B. Says for wheat, oats, rye, and barley. But many, many people who are gluten sensitive can handle oats, but that would just be something they would have to try. So oats doesn't seem to be as big an allergen. Foods causing 90% of the allergic reactions are, number one would be milk, and then wheat and eggs. Soy is very big. 80% of the kids who are allergic to milk are allergic to soy. And so at first we were looking at soy as a good food, then they realized it was a phytoestrogen, is what they give menopausal women to increase estrogen. So we said, maybe we don't want to be giving our boys a lot of estrogen. We're not afraid of a little bit of soy, but now we found that that tends to be a real high allergen. So a child who has a lot of discomfort with food allergies, they often limit their diet to only about 7 foods. Remember, Dr. Lyndon Smith says kids crave what they're allergic to. And that's just something to watch even for ourselves, isn't it? We're just going to go through quickly through the different allergy tests because you may have some questions about that. Should I test? Shouldn't I test? How much credence to give to the various allergy tests? Oh, by the way, there's peanuts on here. If you have a peanut allergy that wants to be like a number 3 on the allergy test, that's anaphylactic, and they will send an anaphylactic possibilities, and they'll send an EpiPen home with you. And so that is always something that you want to watch. We're getting more peanut allergies too, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're getting all more allergies. Why? Because our kids are getting toxic. And what are we to get? What's the most thing that we do every day, besides maybe go to the bathroom, is what? We eat. So if they're getting toxic, what would be the first thing you'd look at? Yeah, that's got to be the food, doesn't it? Certainly not the only factor, but a pretty big, I think real common sense tells us that. So what are various allergy tests? This is not a thorough report, but there is a scratch test, which many times I'll have parents say, oh yeah, they're not allergic to any foods at all. And they said, oh, what test did you do? Well, we did the scratch test. Oh, I so wish that that would work because it's a non-invasive test, but it doesn't tell us what food allergies they have. The way they tell us of environmental allergies, but environmental allergies we feel are secondary. A kinesiology testing, the muscle test response that chiropractors use and NAET practitioners use. Even though it's a whole new method and it's unusual, many parents see some real good information coming from that in terms of what they're allergic to, and then they do the 6-week elimination trial if that comes out. And so that's a very valid way for many parents go, totally non-invasive and gives you information. Then we have the blood tests, such as the RAS test is very common, and that they found is good. It tends to under-identify. The ELISA, E-L-I-S-A test has many false negatives. It shows everything often they've eaten in the past month. And then we have the elimination challenge test, which by most health professionals is considered to be the most reliable. However, you could do it many times when children are allergic or they have a lot of respiratory problems, or any child who has been given medication for asthma, the pediatrician should refer to an allergist for a blood test. And the blood test that will give you number 3 reading if the antibodies are high, or 2 or 1, and then at least you can see. They're not perfect. For example, we had a young man who had asthma. In fact, he was had RSV. He was intubated for a while because his whole respiratory system shut down. They, of course, sent him for allergies, and he was allergic to eggs and dairy. And they took him off the dairy and the eggs, and the allergist said, let's bring him back in about 6 months to see. Many times these kids outgrow the allergies. In 6 months, they went back and tested. He was still mildly allergic to the eggs, and they said, not allergic to the dairy at all. And when the person told me that, I said, I doubt if that's the case. And they said, well, we want to put dairy back in. I said, okay, well, let's just watch. Well, the first week, the child was just doing the allergic salute. And so, just rubbing his nose. And the parents said, oh, that could be all sorts of things. We were out in the grass and such. And the next week, the little boy's nose started running. And she thought, oh, yeah, well, we've been playing in the dirt, and the wind was blowing. It could be that. And the next week, the little boy developed a cough. And she said, all right, it's got to be the dairy. And took him off of it, and all of those stopped. So just to tell you that in my working with children and other people, we find nothing tells the story like a good elimination. 6 weeks off, 6 weeks on. The others are good to do, so you know where to start with your elimination. But then you'll just have to watch for symptoms and see how those go. We're just going to look at a little more about allergy tests. In the allergy blood test, there's just a very common one, the immunoglobulin E, the IgE, antibody mediated. It's the acute reaction. In other words, it'll show right away that they have an allergy to that. It measures only the first reaction, and that's what we find when we make our determinations from. However, what's more important is what's happening secondarily. The cell-mediated immune response is a chronic reaction. It's the secondary. It's the one we don't see. It'll be the one that in a few days, all of a sudden, they're unhappy, or they get the chronic runny nose. It doesn't happen right away. That's the one that's tricky for allergy tests to pick up. It's, and again, it affects the gastrointestinal tract even more, but this one measures a delayed reaction. And that, as I say, that's the one we don't pick up as much, which is why more kids have allergies than we realize, because our tests, as all many tests are, they're imperfect. So we know that 5% of the food reactions, the blood measures, the 5% of the food reactions are what we call IgE mediated, which means they're the first reaction. It's the one you're going to see on the blood test. But 95% of them are cell mediated, which means those are the ones that are going to be a delayed response. Those are the ones that the child's sensitive to, will still have behavior changes with, but it didn't show up on the blood test. Or they have an intolerance to it. They'll get stomach aches with it after having an accumulation of it. That would be a child who can handle a little bit of dairy, they say. After 4 days, though, then they get a stomach ache. The accumulation is there. Those are the things that don't show a blood test, which is why we just have to plain be good observers. because we don't know. Remember, if something is going wrong in the child's behavior body, think fungus and think allergy. Eczema, by the way, is a huge flag that something is amiss with the child's immune system. Don't we see a lot of eczema? Just so common, eczema, allergy, eczema, asthma. So the child can have food sensitivities that aren't going to show on these blood tests, and yet they will still have as big a behavior reaction, maybe not as big a physical reaction. So sensitivity is defined as an abnormal response to food or food additive, and that's where Dr. Ben Feingold came in. He said, we notice that these kids do real poorly with red Kool-Aid, or with yellow Kool-Aid, or a blue Gatorade. Colors are really bothering them, and because those are just great, just create many more toxin levels for these kids. So that would be a sensitivity. It doesn't show on the test. It's non-immunological. The reactions, though, will imitate a little that of a mild allergy, but it affects behavior most. You see, that's the paradigm shift that we want people to realize, is that allergies can affect behavior only, and not the body at all. Too much talking. So as we look at food sensitivities, that's where we get most of our kids in here. Most offending foods are aspartame. NutraSweet is in so many things, isn't it? And the tetrazine, the yellow dye, MSG, BHT. We're not doing our child any favors when we put that in, because it's just harder for them. Now, that doesn't mean never when they're at grandma's or they're at a friend's house. You know, you're not going to follow them around unless you have a real issue, then you would. But that is, it's just something, if we can stay away from it. The sicker they are, the more we need to stay away from it. We can have just a food intolerance. A food intolerance is defined as a reaction to a food as a result of a deficient enzyme. And we think of lactose, you know, the lactase enzyme. In milk, intolerance causes bloating, gas, diarrhea, and reflux. We first treat with an enzyme, then we're going to treat as an allergy and eliminate for 6 weeks and observe the reaction. But you can't just have an intolerance. Again, it doesn't show up on tests. So then let's look a little bit more specifically about why people do these diets. Why do people do the gluten-free diet? Well, some base the success of this diet on the opioid excess theory, and you've heard of that. It's incompletely digested peptides with opioid activity could precipitate autistic behavior. Opioid peptides of dietary origin detected in the urine of children with autism. And this is exactly what they found. They said, why are we seeing opium-like materials in the blood of these children? Why are they getting that kind of, where are they getting that kind of drug? And it came from undigested gluten, is what they realized. And the only opium I think of is in Sherlock Holmes. You know, they went to the opium dens and they just spaced out the whole time. Morphine is an opium, or an opiate kind of medication. So it would have that kind of reaction. So it's not good, is it? It doesn't help you be social. It doesn't help you behave correctly. And they said that was something they found physically in their blood. And so one of the things, one of the theories for taking children off of gluten is this reaction. Others base the success of a gluten-free diet on the basis of an allergy due to poor immune system function. So gluten is a highly allergic food for a child whose immune system is really whacked. Whatever the reasons, we see a lot of success with it. Children with autism may be predisposed to sensitivity to dietary proteins, leading to, what do we know, GI inflammation and behavioral symptoms. We see the behavioral symptoms, we can't see the inflammation. If we could see the inflammation, wouldn't we treat them as sick kids? And we really need, I always think of those, we need a little glass door in there, a little gut couldn't wait, so we could just open it up and see how inflamed something is making them. We could make so many changes. We know 18% of children with autism allergen have allergen-specific IgE antibodies. 91% or 91.8% of children with autism had a positive response to gluten-free, dairy-free diet. Now, that could be from they thought they were a little bit better to just huge. You'll read that on the site. Parents see changes all over the board. Children with autism had an increased pro-inflammatory cytokine response against dietary proteins, gluten, casein, and soy. So that's an important thing to know. Let's not replace it. Replace the dairy with soy. Gluten-free in general, dairy is the most common allergen. It tends to produce more physical symptoms such as GI tract involvement, respiratory issues, eczema, mental fog. So the dairy affects physical more, but in general, gluten allergy is the next most common. It produces more neurological symptoms, such as withdrawal, auditory and visual disperceptions, seizures, and behavior issues. So that's why we start with the dairy first, and then move on to maybe the more serious, which would be the gluten. Parents have better success. As we talked about, when we do an antifungal program first, acidophilus, a grapeseed extract, for several months to balance the gut flora. Then many parents will do a 3-month trial of the dairy-free next. Then they do a 3-month trial of gluten-free. You could do 6 months, you could do 3 months. It's whatever you decide, 6 weeks or 3 months. And lots of kids responded well to that. So what are the improvements these parents are telling us about? Why would it be worth changing the diet that much? Number one, speech and communication skills really do improve. And that's what we see. But as I say, we don't often want to start with that if we can help them focus. These are the things they report and schools report. Hyperactivity gets better. And if you're working with these children closely, then you would notice those things. In fact, they're beginning to write this into IEPs, that the child responds well to a gluten-free and a dairy-free diet. Then the school will get on board to help, you know, keep the lunch, the gluten-free, dairy-free, and snacks. And many times, if it's written in the IEP, the school takes over the expense of that. Not that it's a big expense at all. What many parents will do is that on pizza day, when kids want to participate, they bring a frozen pizza from the health food store. Gluten-free, a dairy-free pizza. All they do is put it in the microwave like they do all the other pizzas, and then they have that. It's not very hard. Debbie's Gluten-Free Bakery, and she has debbiesglutenfree.com. We go to just D-E-B-Y-S, glutenfree.com. She has, in Denver, she has her gluten-free products at Bojo's Pizza. Do you see that? Yeah, so you can get it there. All over, she's starting to put them in King Supers, in Safeway, so that children have a real good, viable alternative, and the parents don't have to make everything from scratch. They have seen improvements in their sleep, and they stay asleep all night. Their GI symptoms very much improve. Less preoccupation with self. These are the things that they're seeing. It's good to remember autism is more than a neurological disorder. It's a biochemical disorder that can be treated. We're going to identify, treat, and restore the underlying biochemical disorder that may cause or exacerbate the autistic symptoms. If it doesn't cause, it's inflaming it and exacerbating it. This is a study that was done with Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride. Has written a book called The Gut and Psychology Syndrome. Prior to writing the book, she just wrote different articles for different places, and she said, of all the interventions that we've done with our son, he was autistic, the diet has had the most profound effect. Connor is much more connected. He is more aware of everything around him, and sensory responses are more appropriate. He has excellent contact. So for some parents, it is just such a big change that they are more than